Today on the AF Podcast, we have an in-depth conversation about Russell Westbrook. Yeah, that's about it. I invite South Shirai family member Kevin W. as we have the conversation on Westbrook, his game, how he impacts the Thunder, if his strengths are strengthening his weaknesses. We get into all of that here. Plus, we kind of got to discuss what Dame did. I mean, don't we kind of have to? And what I'd love for you to do is to continue to listen and subscribe to all the shows from South Shirai Radio. Rate and review on your podcast streaming apps as well. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, and Google Podcasts. And to listen to my remaining catalog of podcast shows, make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com. It's the AV Podcast with Cal C on South Shore AV Radio. Dame Dollar.
Damn. Welcome to the AV Podcast with Cal C on South Shore AV Radio.
Before we even get into this whole Westbrook conversation, what were your thoughts on Game 5? And I don't even have to mention the series, because the whole world knows what it is. But what was your thoughts on Game 5?
You know, I actually think it's one of the greatest shots I've seen in a long time. I'm not going to be a victim of the moment and say it's the greatest shot I've ever seen, but it ranks up there with, like, some of the greatest playoff moment buzzer beaters that I've ever seen. The drama... I'll say that the rivalry, the drama, the ending of any debate or discussion, like, just pack your bags, go home. I'm putting an end to this. 47 points to get to 50. No time left on the clock. Yeah, not everything on the line, but just the magnitude of the moment and the mere fact that he did it with such a cold-blooded look on his face. Just wave goodbye to the Thunder and then just, like, exit stage left. Beautiful, man. Beautiful. Yeah, the other thing is, like, that shot did more than just send Oklahoma City home and end the series. It's just added to the Westbrook postseason woes argument. You know, it just changed everybody's blackboard of discussions of hot topics for tomorrow. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It turned it into, like, great job by Dame, but also, what's wrong with Russell Westbrook? And now we're turning all our focus, like, we're lumping the blame on him.
Mm-hmm.
Rightfully so or unrightfully so. There are a lot of factors at play, but what did you think?
Well, first off, I can't even say I'm ashamed to say this because, I mean, but, you know, it's life. I fell asleep. Okay, I'll admit it. I fell asleep. So, I fell asleep. I'm ashamed to say it. I fell asleep. I'm a grown man. I'll admit it. I'm a man up. I fell asleep. I didn't see the first half. I realized he scored 34 points. I said, there's no way in hell I'm going to bed now. I got to watch this game. I saw the third quarter where he kind of he kind of tailed off a bit. And then, I think OKC had the lead going into the fourth. And then I blinked, and it was about 6:30 in the morning. And then when I looked at my phone, I saw, my phone, had like 100 messages and all the pictures. And, oh, my God, he had 50. He scored 50. And I'm like, what the hell did I just miss? And excuse me. But, yeah, man, what's the saying? The revenge is a dish best served cold. Like, that is probably the epitome. It's a combination of that and a mic drop. Like, that's basically the epitome of that shot by Lillard. I don't want to sit here and say it was the greatest shot I've ever seen either, because, I mean, he also had a series clinching three about 4 years ago against the Rockets that was, I wouldn't say it was equally as impressive, but it was very impressive, you know? And this one was just, with the stakes and everything behind it, the venom between him and Westbrook, Paul George, I mean, even though I missed it, but Paul George, was apparently really rolling that game. I think Westbrook had a pretty good game, too, even though he shot 31 times. Just the whole venom behind the whole back and forth between Westbrook and Russ. Sorry, Westbrook and Dame. You can't ask for a better nail in a coffin moment to your opponent than that. That is the epitome of saying shut the fuck up. There's nothing you can say. Like, what can you say if you're Westbrook?
The funny thing is, Dame didn't say anything either. He just waved, right? and he provided a meme or a gift
for life.
The ages.
For life.
You know, like, that'll be on T-shirt. I'm pretty sure people have been using it already. Like, it's been downloaded a million times.
Oh my gosh.
Honestly?
It's well, I mean, I think this afternoon one of the chat groups were in. I've already changed our profile pic to that meme. I've already done it. and I will get that on a T-shirt if I could.
You know what gives it so much more magnitude? The fact that there was a rivalry and there was a backstory. So the one that he hit against Houston, there wasn't that much chirping. There wasn't that much like trash talk or anything, right? Yeah. That was just a huge shot that he hit off a curl. And I think he licked that shot in Chandler Parsons' face.
Yep. I mean, the only thing you really remember from that series was, what trying to remember, I remember Aldridge was went insane the first like 2-3 games. We had like back to back 40-point games, and then
that was
remember the big thing, and then Lillard kind of took over from there after that. It was like Lillard's first real star turn. You know what I mean? And
right.
And you look at a guy like he's been underrated. I shouldn't say underrated. He's not underrated. Skill-wise, he's not underrated. In terms of marketing, he is. He doesn't get the same love and the same shine as like a Steph or a Kyrie or even a Russ in terms of the mainstream success. But I don't know. I think this season might start to change that.
No, well, like what I was trying to say is the fact that you have the backstory and we're eating it up with a spoon because it's mano a mano. And it's like Westbrook versus who's Westbrook having a grudge with this year? Who's going to get in Westbrook's head this year? Is it Rubio? Is it Mitchell? Is it Lillard? Is it Durant? Who is it going to? Is it the official? Is it the guy? Is it the fan in Utah?
Is it Barry Trammell, the OKC reporter?
Is it Billy Donovan? You pick whoever it is. He's going to get into an argument with, or Cameron Payne for not giving him a high five a couple years ago. Remember that one where he just gave him a death stare?
No, that wasn't him. That was Jeremy Lamb.
Oh, it was Jeremy Lamb. Okay, sorry. Yeah. But yeah, or his own teammates. It doesn't matter. But it was like the Westbrook versus who this year, and it was Lillard. And again, it feeds into that cycle. Yeah, you can't take the triple-doubles away from him, but you sure can start pointing fingers now because, yeah, he's rolling the triple-doubles, but they're not winning anything.
And for those who don't know the whole backstory, the reason why this beef started essentially is because 2 years ago, or no, sorry, last year when the All-Star game occurred and they picked the All-Star teams, Westbrook had a problem with PG not being on the team with him. And when they asked who would you take out, he said Dame's name, which I thought was, and I totally forgot about that. But, you know, looking back on it, I mean, it's a little classless. It's disrespectful. You might have somebody in mind, but you let the public, you let people like us decide that. You know what I mean? You let the media talk about that. You let social media talk about that. You don't say that. As much as we love, you know, the concept of keeping it real, and we love, you know, our athletes and our celebrities to like say what's really on their mind. In a situation like that, you can't devalue somebody else in that particular situation, because the All-Star game is about a celebration of the game, a celebration of, you know, the 24 best players in the league. You know, it's a positive time. You don't kind of bring that in there. You know what I mean? And then on top of that, you got to be in the locker room with this guy. Well, actually, maybe not, because now they kind of change it, you know, to picking the teams now, like between the two captains. So it's a little different now, but you just don't do that. You just don't do that. And like, I wish I paid more attention to like their games after he said that. I felt like, Kevin, we might have missed out on the undercover gem. I feel like we kind of missed out on some moments even during those regular season games that, you know, that would have, like, really piqued our interest. My favorite Dame is whenever he plays Golden State, because he comes for them like he's a character in Braveheart, you know, every time he plays against them, you know? But I mean, they never win. But, like, my God, especially when the games are in Portland during the regular season, man, he's going for 40, 50, 55 if he could. He's trying to make everybody pay. You know, and especially too, because, you know, that's his hometown. Oakland's his hometown. You know what I mean? So he's got to rep the city. You know what I mean? While he's going against their team. But,
right.
You know, but with that said, it's like, I kind of really wish I could rewind back and look at some of those games again to see, like, if, you know, that simmering beef, you know what I mean? Because if I'm Dame Lillard and I already have an issue with raising my profile being, you know, so deep in the Northwest, and then you're having somebody, basically another all-star, one of your peers, basically taking you off that team, you know, like, you know, he's imaginarily taking you off the team. I mean, you know, like, how do you not have a chip on your shoulder going forward? Especially somebody like him who already has a chip on his shoulder. He's not a boisterous guy, but how do you not? You know what I mean?
I'm not going to say that this is part of the Petty Wop Awards. You know what I mean? I'm not going to say this is a finalist, but all this is stemming from an all-star game comment.
It's beautiful.
Really? An all-star game that means absolutely nothing. No one plays defense. The uniforms mean, who cares? Like, really?
Everybody's got an ego when you're at that level. You know what I mean? Everybody.
I wholeheartedly agree. It's just like, it's just the smallest things.
Right.
Will just percolate and escalate right into exactly what we got yesterday. I'm all for it. NBA, man, year round. Just like this league is just printing money and headlines. This is ridiculous. Here's something else, though. I want to throw a question your way, if you don't mind.
Okay.
Because this has been one of the main critiques, right? Score was 115. There's like 8 seconds left. Lillard played that perfectly. He had the pacing. He had the timing. He, you know, he mapped everything out, and he shot the ball with no time left on the clock, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's like Belichick time management, you know, like just like the meticulous, like Tom Brady marching down the field. You left too much time on the clock. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Brady's coming. If the situations were reversed and, like, let's say Lillard was guarding Westbrook, 8 seconds left on the clock, would Westbrook have shot a 37 footer with 6 seconds left on the shot clock or in the game, on the game clock? Is it that impossible to fathom? Think about it. Like, let's be honest. If Dame would have been like, I dare you to shoot it, Westbrook was already in mid-release before you can pick out the whole sentence out of his mouth. Like, Westbrook was shooting that. And it hit off the side of the backboard, carom out of bounds, and then, like, whatever else happened. You know what I mean? Like, you kind of see that happening. But you don't see that happening with Lillard.
To answer that question, I'm going to keep with that Westbrook energy. Next question.
You know, that's kind of maybe one of the reasons why so many people in the media are harping on him today, is because of the way that he treats the media in post-game press conferences and in the locker room.
Yeah, and I mean that's something. I mean, the Barry Trammell situation, you know, with Westbrook. I mean, that's, I'm not really surprised by that, because really and truly, he's kind of been surly with the media for a long time. You know what I mean? Like, at least post-game conferences. I wouldn't say all media, but, like anytime you ask a foolish question, you know, you're going to get some blowback. And, you know, with most athletes, that's okay. I don't really have an issue with it. But you just feel like there's, like, a lingering anger with them there all the time. You know what I mean? Like, you feel like after, like, the whole scrum is over and the reporters are leaving, he's, like, looking at this reporter like, fucking Fred. What kind of fucking stupid question is that? He's driving in his car. He really asked me that question. Like, you feel like he's still harboring.
He's
that
doubling
anger.
Back around, going back to the. He's doubling back, going back to the arena. Security guard's like, "What are you doing here, Ryan? Go home." I think it's just that fury, man. We talked about this like 3 years ago, and you know, like when I said, like, he has that relentless fury. That's perfect, but. There's like, you gotta harness that. You gotta, like, know how to work and, like, explode sometimes, not all the time. But now, I wonder why do we care so much about what he's thinking about after the game? You know, he doesn't want to talk to you.
Yeah, that's true.
He of course it's gonna be a headline, but it's like just poking the bear.
But you know what, though, you're a professional athlete. It's part of the job. You know what I mean? Like, it's something that me personally, as well, the thing I hate the most is when they were interviewing coaches at the end of the between the first and second quarter and the third and fourth quarter. I can't stand that. Like, why do we need to know? You know what I mean? It's like, why do we need to know what the coaches is thinking? You're not going to get a real answer in the heat of the moment of that game. Like, you're not going to get anything. Like, have you learned anything substantial from any of those interviews ever? I mean, God bless those sideline reporters. I love you, Roz. God bless them sideline reporters. What are you getting? Like, what information are you getting from? I always feel like you should throw that part of it just out of the game. We don't even need it. Who cares? We don't need it. You know what I mean? Maybe at the worst, do like football. Save it for halftime. Interview the away coach, you know, going into the locker room. Interview the the home coach, you know, going into the third quarter. You know, like coming out of halftime. Maybe save it for that. Like, really and truly, we don't get anything substantial from those moments. You know what I mean?
I think the NBA might get something. Maybe sponsorship money. Right?
Is that sponsored?
I don't know. There must be some reason why. We were never asking for it.
No.
And you're absolutely right. There's nothing of value. What are we going to do? Well, we got to stay aggressive and we got to keep up. Like, great. That's like a hockey interview. Got to stay aggressive. Got to play a full game and, you know, maintain our focus. Great. Thanks. Back to you, Jim.
Yeah. Like it's funny. All my years of watching basketball, I never sat back and was like, man, I wonder what Dwayne Casey's thinking right now in this moment. I hope he talks to him. Whoa! He was right. He really does want to play Blake Griffin more. Fuck, thank you.
Yeah, it sucks. But let's dissect a little bit more. What percentage of blame do you think belongs to Westbrook, Paul George, Billy Donovan, and bad game management? Like, what percentage? Because everyone's sitting on Westbrook today and letting Paul George off the hook. More or less.
But
Westbrook did shoot the ball 11 times more than Paul George did, even though Paul George was rolling in the fourth quarter.
Right. And you know what? You know, this is something I always harp back to. You know, players, especially in sports, you know, I've said it in multiple podcasts, players reflect the mentality of the leader. And it's something Shaq says, which I can't believe I'm agreeing with Shaq here. But it's kind of the same concept of, you know, when Shaq goes, if the generals don't panic, the troops don't panic. But there's truth to that, though, right? Like, because I always believe, like, the attitude of the team is a reflection of the leader. If the leader's calm and he's making great decisions, teams tend to follow. It's not a coincidence that the temperament of the Spurs when Tim Duncan was there for most of the time, even when he started giving up the mantle, they still played a certain way. They were still disciplined. They were still committed. They always made the smart play. Like, if you beat the Spurs, it wasn't because they were going to beat themselves. You know what I mean? Like, they you had to take that from them. You know what I mean? Like, Jordan's teams, you know, back in the day was like, you know, like, especially like the late 90s when him, Pippen, and Rodman were together, they were like Dobermans and Pit Bulls. You know what I mean? And they carried that mentality throughout the time. AI's teams, you know what I mean? Like AI's teams, they played scrappy, they played hard, they never gave up. Like, it always kind of reflects the image of the leader. It's like a mirror effect. And when I look at OKC the last 3 years, you know, AD after Durant, every time I look at OKC, I can always count on mistakes being made. I can always count on mistakes being made. I can always count on Westbrook losing his cool. I can always count on, you know, a moment that if there's a chance to bait Westbrook, he's going to take the bait. It's almost like clockwork, you know. And like I said, and mind you, I didn't see the game yesterday, so it's hard for me to really comment on what happened. I know, like I said, Paul George had a good game. Actually, start. You maybe answer this part, and then I'm going to go into a little part here. So go. I'll let you jump in.
I do want to say this because, again, as a long-suffering Knicks fan, I do have to say this. There's a difference between being the leader of your team and there's a difference of being the heart of your team. Sometimes, if you're fortunate enough, your superstar encompasses both. But sometimes you have one guy that's just the Oakley of your team, Nick reference. another guy like your Patrick Ewing of the team. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But you can't rely on someone like Russell Westbrook. And it's not Russ's fault. That Tiger went Tiger. There's nothing new about this. Mm-hmm. Right? Yes, he's a saber-tooth. No, he's a Tasmania devil. Don't expect him to use a knife and fork at the table. He's using a cutlass, you know, like he's eating with his hands. That's it. But, like, it's this thing that I think our problem now is because we were so blessed on having, like, let's say, a Jordan, and that was the, or like, let's say, a Tim Duncan, and those were, like, the, they have it all. They're the leader. They're the heart of the team. And now for anyone else, like, oh, look, you're leading us in scoring and you want to average triple-doubles, you're our leader. Not necessarily. Because if you watch how he leads, or if you watch, like, the Westbrook effect, it kind of creeps into his teammates as well. Durant was kind of, you know, like, let's be honest here. When Oklahoma City hits the court, and even after the game, there's some sodium at the podium.
Mm-hmm.
You remember a couple years ago, when they were facing, shit. Sorry, are you not hearing that feedback?
No, I'm not. I'm not hearing it. Let me try. Let me move away. It could be me. It could be the microphone where I'm all close to the phone.
So think about like post game press conferences where it was Westbrook and Adams, and the reporter asked Adams a question, and then Westbrook just cut him off, shut him down, and be like, "You're not answering. We're not answering that. We're not playing that game," kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Adams didn't have a chance to speak. Or like when Durant was there and he and Westbrook were kind of like double teaming the media kind of thing. Now we do know that Durant is a little bit sloppy towards the media. That's fine and dandy. But like even like a Paul George yesterday, like, yeah, he hit that shot. That was a bad shot. Like, dude, shut up. He ended the series in your face. And he's shooting a higher clip on doing those than Westbrook shooting for like the series. What are you talking about? Just give him his props.
Right.
Or like Schroeder doing the rockabye baby or whatever like that. Like, listen, Schroeder wasn't doing that in Atlanta. But it's like this Westbrook effect. Like, I don't know. It's something. It's like a fog.
Yeah. Like I said again, Kevin, I don't think it's a coincidence when, like I said, when you start seeing the effects of that. And it's, you know, it's funny to even go back further, right? I'll take it back like to 2012. We know when they made the finals and they lost to Miami. They lost to LeBron, right? And a series that was probably closer than what people really realized. But, those moments, I remember those times, like, there was actually people out there that were, you know, like, wondering if you should trade Westbrook because he was just so volatile. It was kind of even worse than what it is now. You know, like, but it was pretty bad. Because, I mean, really, naturally, truly, he's not a real point guard. You know what I mean? I don't think he's ever been that. He's kind of been forced into that role. But I always felt like when Harden was there, I thought Harden was more the point guard of that team than Westbrook was. Because when Harden used to come into the game, and I mean, yeah, we all know he got, you know, he got traded. He should have never got traded, all that stuff. But the biggest thing was I thought when he got into the game, he allowed Westbrook to just – like just to go all out and be fully aggressive, and he kind of like filled in the holes. You know, he got the offense running. You know, he made sure Westbrook got his shots. He made sure KD got his shots, and then he got his own shots while playing D. Like he was a jack of all trades, and it's kind of why, you know, when D'Antoni took over the team in Houston, it's kind of why D'Antoni was like, "Yo, you're gonna be our point guard," because and everybody was shocked by it. But I'm like, well, you know what? He kind of saw it in OKC. He could kind of do it. And I thought that was like the biggest thing for Russell, right? Because it allowed Westbrook just to be really aggressive, which is you kind of like you want to kind of channel that aggression. You know what I mean? Like he's shown in all this time, especially, you know, especially the last 3 years, that he's not going to be the guy to channel his aggression. You know what I mean? So you kind of got to do it for him. You know, and I thought when Harden was there, they did a good job of kind of harnessing that in because they kind of took that role away from him in certain moments and they just, you know, and it worked. It worked beautifully, right? So, and then last year, it's funny because last year after they played Utah, my biggest complaint was they need to get a Rondo because I thought they needed a point guard that goes in there and makes great decisions and lets him just, you know, just be unleashed. Like, just take the leash off. Just go nuts.
Right.
You know what I mean? I thought that was the biggest thing. While having somebody make those good decisions for the rest of the team. You know what I mean? Like, you kind of work around that. And I thought when they traded for Schroeder, I thought maybe that, you know, like, yeah, it wasn't Rondo, but maybe it might work with Schroeder in that kind of role. My only problem was that Schroeder is still a younger guy. You know what I mean? Is Westbrook going to allow him to, you know, to take the steering wheel and make those decisions? Because somebody like Rondo, like if Rondo was there instead of Schroeder, Rondo wouldn't give a shit. Rondo will bite you back in your face. You know what I mean? And he's the type of guy that will tell Westbrook, listen, run off the screen. You know what I mean? I got this. And he has the respect that you would have to listen to him. But somebody like Schroeder, I don't know if Schroeder has that same respect. You know what I mean? So, therefore, at the end of games, he's still making critical decisions, you know, and big moments.
So, allow me to just simply be an advocate here. First, allow me to be impartial. I blame Oklahoma City and Sam Presti more than I blame Russell Westbrook. Okay. I always say it always starts from your management, right? You should know by now that you're not, like, Westbrook doesn't work with everybody, and Westbrook should not be. If you can't trust him to make the right basketball play year after year after year, maybe it should be your job to go find somebody that you can bring in to help take the edge off.
Right.
Maybe Oklahoma City suffers from small town syndrome where they're like, he left us. He's gone. Please don't leave us. We'll surrender the keys to the kingdom. You left free reign. Do whatever you want. Didn't they induct him into the Oklahoma City Hall of Fame, Basketball Hall of Fame, whatever the hell that is, wherever that is, right after Durant left? Didn't they remember that makeshift ceremony they had for him?
Yeah, I feel like the only people that would have made the Basketball Hall of Fame for Oklahoma would have been Blake Griffin, Stacey King, and Mookie Blaylock when they used to play for the Oklahoma Sooners in college. But go on.
Well played. Good one. Yeah. But Blake wants no part of that. No. Maybe his brother. What's his brother's name there? Blake's brother.
Tyler, Jerome, Loquacious, whatever. It doesn't matter. What's
all right. Yeah.
David Griffin? Yeah, I don't know his name. What is his name? I can't remember. Let's call him Tyrone.
They basically surrendered, like, the keys to the kingdom. Been like, here, you drive. Yeah, basically it. You drive. Mm-hmm. But you know that Russ might like to speed. Ah, who cares? Just please don't leave us. Here, you drive. Do whatever you want. And it's funny, the same guy that we celebrated for averaging a triple double and everything like that has now been averaging a triple double for three straight seasons. And now we're like, oh come on. All right, the jig is up. Come on, man. You know? Three consecutive seasons, 82 games of, like, you know what I mean? Like, that's over 200 games, let's say. Triple-double, average. Is that for the team or is that for Russ?
You know what? I'm going to poke holes in the triple-double theory because I've never felt like, I won't even be impartial here. My favorite player is Magic Johnson. I've mentioned this many times. I don't want him passing Magic Johnson for the triple-double record. That's part of my childhood, man. So, maybe a part of me is annoyed with that, but I would say it's a small part, right? I think the bigger part for me is the way in which he gets his triple doubles. To me, is I understand how hard it is to do, and it's like a catch 22 because as much as I respect him for doing that, averaging a triple double three straight years in the NBA, not like an average total, but just straight for three straight years is impressive. Kevin, but man, does it feel like it's inauthentic? You know what I mean? Because especially in 2017, like 2017, you know, he won the MVP, which I didn't agree with. I thought Harden should have won it that year. And the reason why I was like, I was against him winning is because I didn't want to award somebody the MVP just for getting a triple double. Like, they won 47 games. There was other players that was doing more. Not to the size, not doing more, but they were doing as much while their team was winning. Like Harden, for example. I would say he came pretty close to averaging a triple-double that year when you look at the stats. And and they won eight more games. And then when they met up in the first round, they gave them a gentleman's sweep. Like, it wasn't even really a close series. It's funny. And I mean, that was the first season after Kevin Durant, you know, left. And I always equate that to, like, I equate the spirit of Westbrook that season to, like, to give it a proper analogy. I don't know if it was Jenny Jones or it was Maury Povich. Remember those episodes where, like, the girl wasn't what she might have liked some guy in high school, and the guy wasn't feeling her, or the guy dumped her, or the old boyfriend that dumped her, and then they brought the boyfriend back on the show, or the guy back on the show, and then the girl came back with a makeover, and she looks amazing and beautiful, and she's like, "Well, look at me now, aren't you jealous?" To me, that was kind of like the Westbrook season. That's what the triple double meant to be that season. It was like, "Look at me now, look at my legs, I look hot, don't you miss this?" And
right.
Everybody was like, "Nah, not really. I'm good." Like, Katie was a guy that was like, "Respect to you, but I'm going back home. I'm going home with my wife and kids. I'm straight."
Yeah, yeah. I got rings to polish. I'm focused on other stuff. That was either Maury, or Ricky Lake.
I swear it was Jenny Jones. I'm trying to remember. I couldn't remember if it was Jenny Jones.
Everyone uses that pattern. That's fine. I just wonder right now. I know we're going to point blame on him, because we're obviously not going to point blame on Playoff P, right? What do you do? Like, the hard part is for the Thunder, they're maxed out. You got to realize sometimes these guys earn these contracts, but the contracts turn into albatrosses.
Yeah,
Steven Adams is making $25 million for the next 2 years.
But they don't. But how do they use him though? Right now, I think what OKC is missing, and you're absolutely right, they are completely capped out. Because Schroeder's contract isn't like a really small contract either. I don't know exactly what he's making off the top of my head, but I know it's more than $10 million.
Calvin, they have $60 million. They're paying $60 million in luxury tax. And go figure. When I said I blame the Thunderhead office. Remember, this is the same team that from a couple years ago that didn't want to go up $4 million in luxury tax to keep Harden on board,
right?
Instead, you feed the enemy, like a potential MVP candidate, and then you appease Westbrook again. Remember, Oladipo was on that team, too. It just didn't work.
Right.
So, I don't know. How much of that is, like, Westbrook needing the ball that much? Or, you know, dictating so much on the court? You know what? Get rid of Billy Donovan.
Yeah, but here's the question, Kevin. Get rid of him for who? And you know why I say that? Not necessarily because of, you know, Billy Donovan's a bad coach. But again, it's like, how well can you coach when your player doesn't, when you don't have the full ear of that player? You know what I mean? You know what I'm trying to say? Like, it's hard to, like, you're like Billy Donovan is not Greg Popovich. Like, he doesn't come in there and demand the locker room from day one as soon as he steps in. Because I think somebody like Westbrook, he needs to have somebody that he truly respects. From day one, not something that you have to work towards. I'm sure he has a good working relationship with Billy Donovan, but a lot of it is because the way the offense is run. You know, how can you be mad at Billy Donovan? I think some of it is funny because the reason why I thought maybe, and I was wrong about this, that OKC would beat Portland was because I kind of liked the way that the way the season kind of played out before Paul George got hurt. That he was right. Kind of like the 1A, you know what I mean? And I think that's how you kind of have to do it. You know what I mean? Like he has to take more of that number one role and try to take the steering wheel away from Westbrook. Because I think what happened was, especially once he got hurt, I think Westbrook started taking the steering wheel back and, you know, and they struggled. You know what I mean? But I
wholeheartedly agree. And I would be foolish. We would be foolish to not pretend like Paul George was wrapping himself in black mummy tape the longer this season was going along.
Right.
Like in February, like earlier on, it was just like one strip. Now it's two strips. Now it's four strips. Now there's strips on both sides. Like, yeah, listen, the guy was hurt, and they were rolling on all cylinders. And it was actually like, yo, he's almost as good, if not a better fit. He was playing his MVP, like the best ball of his career, basically. I've never seen Paul George ball out like that.
Yeah.
And it was all like when he was healthy. When he got hurt, and Westbrook's like, "I'll drive." He's like, "Oh, shit. We got to pull over and let this guy take the wheel again." Like, you know, like, It's like Elaine driving on Seinfeld and Jerry got sick. No, can't do it. Not everyone deserves to be like driving the car. Average your triple doubles all you want, but Rick, again, Billy Donovan is still the same coach that was responsible for the 3-1 collapse against Golden State, right?
Yeah, fair enough.
He's kept his job since, right? Yeah. And he's had his star player average a triple double for 3 consecutive years, but can't get out the first round. Someone has to fall on the floor for that, and you know you're not getting rid of Westbrook. So maybe this falls on Donovan. He loses his stuff.
I know, but again, who replaces that?
It doesn't matter. You'll find somebody, man.
Yeah, but somebody to do what? I mean, you know, who knows, right? Because I mean, the playoffs hasn't finished yet, but it looks
Is Mark Jackson available? Do you think Mark Jackson will want that job? You think Stan Van Gundy wants that job?
I don't know if Stan Van Gundy wants that job.
Yeah, that's true. the other thing is who wants to be tasked with keeping Westbrook under control? Because I think it was Maurice Teague that was his sideline voice of reason in his ear for a while. But he was aging quicker than like a president was. Like he was just going grayer and grayer and grayer. Just being like, you don't have to run and try and dunk on 4 people. Like you have teammates open, you know. And it never stuck.
Yeah, he was his Mr. Miyagi, basically on the sidelines.
For what that was worth, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but sorry, go on.
Durant, Durant hasn't said anything, but the more this keeps happening, the more we might be looking at, like, maybe this is why he just wanted to play.
Oh, no, I understood. You understood from the moment he did leave. I just, you know, I think myself and everybody else was like, you know, why Golden State? But I understood why he left, because that gets frustrating, man. Like, you know what, like I said, it's because it's, especially when you're that great and you keep getting pushed, you keep pushing to go that far in the playoffs. And don't get me wrong, I know we're bashing Westbrook in some senses, but when he's on and when he's clicking and when he's playing efficiently and when he's playing smart and he's keeping his emotions in check, or he's channeling his emotions, I should say, because I won't say he keeps it in check, but when he's channeling his emotions, it's breathtaking to watch him. Like, I remember, case in point, like last year, I think they were down 3-1 against Utah, and the way he played the second half of Game 5, it was incredible. It was incredible. You know what I mean? Like, he's been through plenty of those moments. But then there's moments like Game 6 when he shoots 43 times and he almost fights fans before taking pictures too close to his face, and he gets outsmarted by a rookie. So there's moments like that, too, where it's like, you know, I don't know. It's funny. Like, I used the analogy yesterday with some friends of mine. I mean, I have so much analogies for Westbrook in this situation. I don't know if you want to go to an analogy war, but I'm like, Westbrook to me is like watching The Godfather if Sonny became the head of the family.
Very good one.
You know what I mean? Like how would that movie? How different would that movie have been? Wouldn't everybody be dead?
Sonny went to war right after breakfast. He even finished eating breakfast. He wanted to go to war right away.
Right. Well, and then he ended up dying.
Yeah. Well, let's hope Westbrook doesn't end up at a Oklahoma City toll booth or anything like that. But we still got. He would, though. You know what's funny? If you told Westbrook, yo, these guys are across town think they can beat you, and you know, he would leave. Anyway, Westbrook would go out in that toll booth seat. Westbrook would pick up a knife, hop in the car, and drive down to a gunfight with just the knife in it, like just the knife as his weapon, and expect to win.
you know what?
True or false?
No, I agree with it. And you know what? Let's take the movie analogies or the show analogies a little bit further. Westbrook and OKC is the basketball version of giving Bishop the gun to hold and juice.
Westbrook in the playoffs, or Westbrook in OKC, is the equivalent of Arnold Schwarzenegger in Commando when he reaches that island and he kills everything in sight. And when he runs out of weapons, he'll use a pitchfork or he'll use a buzzsaw, and he'll just chuck it at your head. Anything you can have as a weapon. And when worst comes to worst, he'll stick a pipe in your chest.
Westbrook is Danny Court after JC killed his brother in New York undercover. Westbrook's whole career since Kevin Durant left is the feeling of Danny Court right before he walked into JC's apartment and wiped out Sandy.
With the acting accuracy as Danny Court's right-hand man. What was that brother's name that couldn't act?
Big Dog.
Oh, my gosh. He could not have been the best of his class. Oh, Westbrook at OKC is, you know what? I'll nail it. I'll say that Dame Lillard and Donovan Mitchell will actually watch like game tape and be like, okay, that's what we got to do to win. Westbrook will watch Scarface, RoboCop, Braveheart, Gladiator, and be like, yeah, kill everyone. Leave a bunch of bodies in my wake.
And next question.
We ain't talking to you anymore. Yeah. Salty boy. By the way, please make sure Westbrook does not get a copy of this podcast. Because... I don't want any random knockings on my door at 4 o'clock in the morning. Mm-mm, not happening. Just saying.
Listen, man. I love watching him play. It's like I said. He's polarizing because as much as we're talking about the bad decisions that he makes and everything else. Yeah, like I said, I think for his career at this point, Kevin, I know we're going to wrap up soon, but like his career, honestly and truly, I want somebody to come in there because like I don't know if it's going to be a coach or if they get another point guard or if they upgrade Schroeder's role to kind of be that guy that makes better decisions, even though he's not I wouldn't call him, he's like a Rondo light, but like I want somebody to come in there and kind of take that away from him because I feel like you're not seeing the best of the full breadth of Westbrook. I know it sounds funny because he's getting all these triple doubles, but I don't feel like these triple doubles they're not worthy of anything because we're not like you can't keep going through this again. And the way their team is now, you kind of got to develop from within because as you mentioned before, they're capped out and they don't have a lot of like, they can't go after big free agents or even, the most they can offer is like a mid-level exception, you know.
I think it's like $5.7 million or something like that.
Yeah, like they're gonna need a couple of shooters. They're gonna need at least one or two shooters, like actual shooters, which they for some reason they've always had a trouble getting to OKC. But they're gonna need something else to get the best of Westbrook. But I think part of it is taking the responsibility of point guard and running the offense out of his hands. Like I'll say that until it actually gets done. I don't know if it'll ever get done. But because you know what it is, Kevin? And you can relate to this being a New York Knicks fan. Westbrook, to me, to use another analogy, not a movie analogy, but a Knicks analogy. Westbrook, to me, is like taking Sprewell and Stark's DNA and shaking it in a bottle really hard. You know what I mean? Like you love those players. You love their intensity. You love their energy. You love their athleticism, especially Sprewell, because I always felt like, you know what everybody says, that Westbrook's, you know, the most athletic point guard. But I never compared him to a point guard when it comes to athleticism before, like, he got hurt, like, you know, last season, because I always felt like he was closer to Sprewell than any other point guard that we've seen. But that's a whole other story. But the reason
But he shoots like Josh Smith, right?
Right. But like, but the reason why I say Sprewell and Starks is because you want those guys on your team. You absolutely want those guys on the team. You absolutely root for those guys. You absolutely love their intensity, but you don't want those guys running your franchise. You know what I mean? And I think Westbrook is probably the very best version of that. But at the end of the day, it's the same result. I don't know if you want him, if you want to win a title, I don't know if you want him being the number one guy anymore. I think we've tried it for 3 years. It's proven, especially in the playoffs, it's proven that it's not working. They're 4-12 in their playoff series since Durant left. So at this stage, we've kind of exhausted the capabilities. He's going to be entering his 12th season next year. He's going to be 31 years old by the middle of November. He's got over 4 knee surgeries, at least 4 knee surgeries or scopes. The way his game is predicated on rage and emotion and speed and athleticism and all those things, as much as we love that, that shit is not going to age well.
The skills, you're right, you're right. The athleticism and the skills, that's enough to get you in the league, but if you don't fine-tune and own everything else, especially shooting, because this is a shooter's league now.
Yeah. And he can't shoot. And
well, unfortunately,
especially this year was terrible.
He's just not accurate enough to justify the number of shots that he takes.
Right.
But here's the thing. If he doesn't defer to Paul George, or at least he didn't yesterday, even though he was rolling, he didn't defer to Durant. I guess, I don't know, was he, I don't know if he deferred to Harden, but are his teammates benefiting or suffering from it? If you take a look at who he's played with, they shouldn't be underachieving so much. Him and Billy Donovan are the only constants that are there. Remember, Oladipo had his best breakout season and became a franchise player once he left being like Westbrook's right hand. Like, that guy, that potential was there? At a certain point, I guess it's like, okay, well, we're out of excuses for blaming everybody else. Like, dude, what you got? You got a guy that's stealing rebounds from his teammate. Remember, he averaged, what is it? Did he pump out 20 rebounds in the last game to make sure he averaged a triple-double?
Right, I think
we just said he played hard, but that wasn't the truth.
Yeah, I was going to mention that, too. The last game of the regular season last year, I think the stat line was like 6 points, 20 rebounds, and like 16 assists or some craziness like that. And, that's what I'm talking about. It's like, yeah, you want to preserve the triple-double, but, like, it rings hollow. You know what I mean? I don't know. It's just something inauthentic about it. I don't know if it makes sense, but it's equally as impressive as it is inauthentic, if that makes sense. It's tough. I don't even know. It's tough.
Okay, if I were to ask you, what song embodies the Westbrook experience? If there was a song,
Slam Onyx.
Sorry,
Slam Onyx.
I think mine is "Can't Tell Me Nothing," Kanye West.
Oh, yes, that's a really good one. I was just thinking Aggression. That's why Public Enemy. I was thinking that too. But yeah, let's go with "Can't." Tell Me Nothing. Actually, that's a pretty good one.
I have a feeling that he's just pumping that. That's his ringtone. That's like, you know what I mean? Like, he just lives by it. That's his anthem.
Okay, so I'll ask you the question to wrap up then. Like, where in your you know, opinion of, you know, being part of the South Shirai family and like just watching games over the years, like where do you see this eventually ending up?
He is best case scenario, he gets it together the older he gets. More realistic situation, he holds the Thunder hostage, and his albatross of a contract is the John Wall West.
I would say that, like I said again, he's a very polarizing figure, because as much as you love him, he's equally frustrating. And watching him as a basketball fan, it's enjoyable. I don't know if I want to play with him. Even though he does share the ball, I don't know if I want to play with him because of the decision making that he makes. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if that's changing. I remember when I was young, I remember Big Brother Curtis used to share this this analogy, this quote, where he used to say something to the effect of, like, you know, and I think you heard this from somebody else, so I can't even really credit him for this, but I remember he used to say something like, the only, you know, as you get older, the only thing that changes about you is your clothes, for most people, right? And I look at, like, a Westbrook situation, and, you know, like I said, going into year 12, I don't know how much that's changing, you know what I mean, like, the terms of the decision making. So my question is, as an organization, as, like, teammates, especially, like, a, you know, a situation like Paul George, how are you working around this to make it the best effective, you know what I mean, like, to get the best out of him and the best out of your team at this point? Because Kevin Durant made it work as best as you could, you know what I mean? And really and truly, not if not for the collapse, and it's not all on Westbrook that collapsed, right? It was on the team,
no,
you know,
no.
That was on Durant himself. You know what I mean? So I never put that all on Westbrook. But you know, I remember one of the things that Durant kept saying all the time was the reason why what attracted him to Golden State was he just wanted to play efficient basketball. Like, as great as he was, you know, the one of the things he kept saying, and I kind of understood because, I understood because he was like, he watches their brand of basketball, and it's so freeing, and it's so free flowing, and it's so smart, and you don't have to work as hard to get your baskets all the time. You know what I mean?
Right. And it's a system.
Yeah, it's something that at some point you kind of want to like realize what that's like. And as fun as it is, maybe playing with Westbrook, you know, you have that you against the world mentality. At a certain point, you know, okay, if you're going to sign another 5-year contract or whatever it is, you're basically resigning the rest of your career to Westbrook, which could be a good thing if he snaps out of it. But we all know, again, it's probably not going to happen. So are you willing to live with that frustration for the next blank amount of years? You know what I mean? In Paul George's case, his answer was yes. But does he, like, you know, like in a couple of years from now, does he look at that indecision and be like, that decision that he made, you know, back in, you know, 2018 and be like, should I have thought this over?
I don't know that Nas concert was that motivating to keep him sport, make him stay. I've never heard anything Nas related to be like, yo, I'm buckling down. I'm all in. Get the cigars. I don't know. I'm very suspicious.
He probably heard, sorry? The world is yours.
another Westbrook anthem for the Oklahoma City plays for him every time he shows up at the arena. Here's what it might be. You know how people say like it's toxic playing, like, or it was put out there that when Durant said it was toxic playing with LeBron,
right?
You know,
mm-hmm.
Because it's so, like, there's so much more that goes into it,
right?
Same thing with Westbrook, but Westbrook isn't as calculating. But just think about like how demanding it must be, whatever unwritten rules, and like, you know, you got to have your dance move down. You got to tap me when I come back to the sideline. You got to be aggressive the whole time. F the media, you know, do this, forget that, you know, like it must be so much more. There's so much more than just basketball. I think it does take a toll. You go to another organization where it's just like, listen, move the ball. This is our system. We practice at this time. We go with it, and that time. That's it. But OKC, it just seems like right now, and it's their own doing, basically. You let them run free, right? Like, that's the system that you chose. And of all the MVP candidates, you know, that you had, and all the draft picks and all the teams that you've built, you put all your chips on the most erratic one. Okay. Tiger went Tiger. By the way, they're very lucky that they are in Oklahoma City, tucked away in the mountains where those fans are going to love them and welcome them back to the airport no matter what. Because that kind of shit will not fly in major market cities.
Right. I agree. Like a Philadelphia.
You're going to be salty with the media, but call yourself playoff Pete. You know what I mean? But you barely have any good, you know, you barely have any salvageable playoff moments. To date, I think his highest or his best playoff moment was that, and it was beautiful, that cram job he pulled on Birdman Anderson against Miami years ago. That was it. But you're not a consistent, you know, it's not like the legend of Paul George is anything.
Yeah.
That commercial fantasy, bro.
And you know, at the end of the day, just to wrap up, you know, like I said, Westbrook is you love him as much as you hate him at times. You know what I mean? And I think what he's going to go through a moment is more hate because of the decisions that he makes during games. Like I said, this is in the four losses that they had against Portland this series, he shot like 35%, I believe, and shot 25 from three. In the four losses, he was not good. And amidst all the trash talking, amidst all the rocking the babying, you know what I mean? Like he got outplayed. Again, this is like a pattern. So really at this juncture, it's on him whether he wants to change that or not. Or is he going to look at the footage of Lillard waving bye to him and the team and seeing the Dame meme, you know, all over T-shirts and Instagram all summer? And is that going to piss him off and make him more angry coming into next season? Because that's not going to help. You know, he's had some good moments. don't get me wrong, I love the 2020 triple double that he had in honor of Nipsey Hussle. Like, I thought that was probably like the best moment he had of the year. And I like the fact that, like I said, he took a little bit of a step back to let George really shine. You know what I mean? Like to be that MVP candidate. I thought, so that's what I said. There's a potential there for him to do these things, but are you trusting him at this juncture to do that? I don't know. Like, he's so overly competitive. He basically harms himself at times. You know what I mean? And I don't know if that's going to stop. Can he control it enough? I don't know. Like, really, like I said, I thought last summer he had a lot to think of. You know, like, especially after the way that Utah series ended. But this season, man, I don't know. I don't know how this is going to work going forward. I don't know. It's like I said, it's going to be really interesting to see how he plays this out, like, in his mind throughout the summer, because how does he come back next year? Like, does he learn to, like, finally, you know, channel his emotions, or is he still going 100?
Maybe you just have to take the ball out of his hands.
Yeah, I've been saying that. I've been saying that
because the whole triple double, the stat sheet production is one thing, but that trick is getting old. Okay, good, you can score. That's great, but who's getting better? Who's growing under you? Like, what is that for the team's betterment, or is that for your betterment? And we're just going to pretend like this is exactly what we need.
Right.
Like, yo, I can grab some rebounds too, man.
Yeah.
Average six. Average six and save yourself. Let me go bang in there with the big guys and, like, you know, and absorb all that contact. Save yourself.
Maybe it's time for Steven Adams to lead the league in rebounding. Maybe it's time for him to get, like, 15 and 13 instead of, like, you know, whatever he averages. I don't know if he averages 10 boards a game, but you know what I mean? Maybe it's time for him to, like, to elevate to that point where he's doing, like, 13 and 15 most nights, or, like, 15 and 15, and he's a legitimate third guy on your team. Because I think he's got some talent, but, I he's structured under one specific role. I think there's some meat on the bone there for him to get better. You know, like I said, you got to explore the possibility of maybe giving Schroeder a more expanded role in terms of decision-making, especially late in games. And if not, if you're not going to go with him, who's on the market, or who could you trade for that guy, like that D Fish, that Rondo, that type of player to come in and be that guy? Like, who's, like, somebody's got to take that role. But I think a large part of this, again, you know, that's part of management's job. And you called it on that one. That's part of management's job to fix. And he has another year of homework to do.
Again, I say this only because I see the ineptitude and the deficiencies of a front office. Yes, you have a very talented pilot. The only problem is he's a kamikaze pilot. Why are you telling him, take the control? Why would you do that?
No, but on that note, brother, thank you for coming on the podcast and talking about Westbrook, man. It's been a pleasure. This has been an entertaining or an enjoyable podcast for myself to unleash. Like I said, we almost did this the night before, and I'm glad we didn't do it. Ooh.
Yo, let me tell you something. As soon as this podcast is done, I'm applying for witness relocation. I'll be a Nunavut or whatever. Good luck. You're on your own.
I just want to add a couple more things before we wrap this episode up for good. Number one, I can't believe Golden State lost that game last night to the Clippers. But you know what? This isn't even about them. It's really about the Clippers. Like Brooklyn, I think they have a very bright future, and they showed themselves well in these playoffs, even more so than Brooklyn. And last night, I have to say, that was a self-made free agency pitch to all unrestricted free agents, especially the superstar ones. LA is Laker country, we all know that, but I really believe that the Clippers is going to be more relevant when it comes to winning than the Lakers are going to be in the next few years. I mean, we're going to see how the offseason shakes out. But how do they not catch your attention if you're KD? And I hate to say it, as, you know, Raptors fans, but even Kawhi. I think they're going to end up losing the series, but they couldn't have asked for a better result than this, to be honest with you. And that's a funny thing. Doc Rivers has been through this before. The season when he was coaching Orlando, I believe it was in 2000, before T-Mac and Grant Hill was there, he had a very scrappy team led by Darrell Armstrong and Bo Outlaw, and they almost made the playoffs. And it was an attractive showing because, you know, look what they ended up with a few months later. They almost landed Tim Duncan on top of that. You know, especially, you know, when you consider all the cap space that they had during that time. And this scenario, you know, let's face it, this scenario with the cap space and an enthusiastic owner, maybe even better. And secondly, I still can't get over Dame's shot, man. I just can't. But more than that, that shot reminds me of Steph Curry. Remember 3 years ago when he hit that shot versus OKC himself that basically set the world on fire? I never truly realized the impact, just how much that shot broke basketball. And not just the NBA, because you see players as young as 12 years old now shooting further and further out. But now you're seeing NBA superstars on a regular basis practicing shooting those shots from almost half court now. And what's crazier is you saw a man that planned on taking a 37-foot step back or a sidestep jump shot, and he didn't even think twice about it. Look, LeBron James is the most important player of this decade because he has been the best player, and he's made the most impact off the court in terms of player empowerment. He's the godfather of that. But I really believe that Steph Curry is the most influential player of this decade when it comes to on-court play. He's opened up the possibilities to what range is now in basketball, and you can't put the cap back on that bottle now. It's amazing to see. He's opened Pandora's box, essentially. And to connect this back to Westbrook, it's going to be interesting to see how the rest of his career turns out, much less next year. I mean, he's still going to be impactful. He's still going to wow us on a lot of nights. But his style of play, or should I say the way he looks at the game now, it's got to change because he's starting to get left behind when it matters most. Now, I don't put all of the blame on him in this series or even necessarily the last 3 years, but he still is the son that the Thunder revolve around. And after watching the last three playoff exits, coupled that with the hard playing style and his injuries and his increasing age, he may have to really consider being more of the moon now. Just food for thought. I'd like to thank all of you for listening to the Av Podcast today. And I want to thank Kevin W. for coming on and sharing his point of view on the Westbrook scenario in Oklahoma City. Make sure you rate and review this episode and continue to listen and subscribe to the Av Podcast as well as all the rest of the shows that come from South Shore Av Radio. Tune into to wherever you're listening to these episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, and Google Podcasts. And to catch up on the rest of my podcast catalog, make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com. For Kevin W., this is Cal C., and you've just tuned in to the Av Podcast on South Shore Av Radio. Until the next podcast, folks, peace.